Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Another wonderful evening of broadcasting right here on LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, and I am looking at lovely, charming, delightfully vivacious Bobby Jean Bell sitting in her little orchid poppy field back in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, 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 Bobby.
I got the California poppy fields behind me. It's wonderful.
Yeah, well, better than having in front of you, I have to say.
Well, welcome spring, Jim, here on April Fool's Day.
Oh, that's right. It's April Fool's Day. April Fool. We're not really here. What did you say? This is our 300th show, live show.
This is, if I've kept count correctly, and, you know, I might be off a little, but, yeah, 300 is tonight, 300 original shows.
And just think, we have our very good friend Henry Park with us tonight, who is, it was always the first Thursday of the month, and we just love hearing from Henry. So without any further ado, Mr. Park, how are you?
I am great. Thank you so much. It's great to be on with you guys. Actually, I've been waiting weeks to share this exclusive news. I got a breaking story here. They're doing Stagecoach again, and they're finally going to get it right. The Claire Trevor role of the prostitute being run out of town will be played by RuPaul. The Thomas Mitchell role of the drunken doctor will mark the big screen debut of Anthony Fauci.
God.
Billie Eilish has the Ward Bond role. Billy Porter plays the pregnant soldier's wife. And John Wayne's role of Ringo, you guessed it, Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, my God.
Is this April Fool's or is this for real?
April Fool's, yes, of course.
Well, you had,
in fact, had me going there.
Scarlett Johansson is playing all the roles.
Yes.
But
you had me, RuPaul.
That's good. Well, seriously, now it's just 24 days until the Oscars, and News of the World has three nominations: Best Cinematography, Darius Wolski; Best Original Score, James Newton Howard; Best Production Design, David Crank, with set decoration by Elizabeth Keenan. Now, the Western world has had a couple of sad losses this past month. Henry Darrow, who played the charming, irresponsible, and irrepressible Manolito on High Chaparral, passed away at age 87. I had a wonderful interview with him, and you can find the link on the Henry's Western Roundup Facebook page. You know, INSP runs High Chaparral every day, and his last movie holds up beautifully. And his last movie is a contemporary Western from 9 years ago called Soda Springs, and it's available for free on IMDb TV. You know, him and Tom Skerritt and a lot of good people. It's well worth seeing. And, of course, Lonesome Dove author Larry McMurtry died at 84.
Right.
You know, Lonesome Dove and its legacy casts such a big shadow that I think a lot of people don't know that among the novels he wrote, which made great movies, were HUD, The Last Picture Show, and Terms of Endearment.
Right, right.
Now, recently
course,
here...
Lonesome Dove was the best.
Yes.
Go ahead.
It was. It was, you know, arguably the best Western, period. And what a novel and what a show. Well, recently I've discussed the sad fact that COVID shut down old Tucson movie studios, and it's not at all clear that it will ever reopen. But I have some very good news. Old Tucson's sister studio, Mescal, outside of Benson, Arizona, has been bought by EIN Presswire and Karchner Ventures, who are fixing it up to get back to making Westerns, and will also open it to the public. It was first used for Winchester 73, and since then you've seen it in Monty Walsh, The Outlaw Josie Wales, Tom Horn, The Quick and the Dead, Tombstone, and many others.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Bobby Jean just reminded me before we went on the air that the Autry has reopened. And
right.
So it is limited, and you need reservations. So, folks, make sure you can get a reservation before you go there. But it's great that it's going to be open in time to see the Master Show. Mm-hmm. Now,
wow.
I had a terrific interview with actor-turned-writer-producer John Wilder, who went from playing Little Beaver on radio's Red Rider to writing and producing the massive miniseries James H. Michener's Centennial. He also wrote and produced Return to Lonesome Dove. You know, they wanted Tommy Lee Jones to return as Captain Call, but he didn't want to do a sequel, so they got John Voight, who did a terrific job. But guess who was the first choice to play Captain Call in the original?
James Garner.
No, but he would have been very good. John Voight.
Oh.
John Voight was the original choice. He didn't like the portrayal of the Indians in the original script, so he turned it down, but he liked the sequel better, so he did it.
Oh, well, there you go.
And please check out the April True West with my interview with Tom Selleck and my article on the best Australian Westerns. And you can learn about all this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Ah, hey, Henry, you know, you mentioned Centennial. I just finished watching that whole series again.
Oh, well.
I have 2 hours left on the last chapter.
And I
How
have
do you like
to
it?
Say, oh, mm-hmm. You know what? I always liked it. But I have to say that the cattle drive with R.J. Poteet was one of the most well done as far as historically accurate.
Yes.
And accurate as far as saddles and gear and everything else goes. What a wonderful job they did on putting that thing together. The cattle, the drive was, every actor in that was really good. And I have to say that it was a fantastic job. The writing, the directing, the cinematography, all of it was really good.
Just beautiful work. And, you know, the studio tried to get from other films, and Wilder would not do it because not only did he, you know, want to actually shoot his own stuff, but if they did, they would have had they wouldn't have had the longhorns. They would have had the hornless cattle, which would have made no sense at all.
Right. Right. And the longhorns actually made that drive. And it's just really great to see it the way they went about it. And that was back in 76. So they did a wonderful job.
They did. And I also think Robert Conrad gave the best performance of his whole career as Pascanel.
Oh, mon dieu. Yeah, he did. He did a good job. Well, so did Alexander McKee. What's his name? Richard Chamberlain.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people in this had the best roles of their career.
I believe you're right. And as far as High Chaparral goes, I'm going to take a couple more minutes here. As far as High Chaparral goes, I think that really holds up well because it was actually filmed in Arizona where it took place.
Right. At Old Tucson, as a matter of fact.
Right. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. In fact, it used to be you go to Old Tucson, you just walk down the street and you're right in the High Chaparral lot.
Exactly.
Which was kind of cool. At the ranch house. Yeah, it's very cool. Anyway, well, thank you so much, Henry. Always good to talk to you. And of course, next month, we're 6 years.
My gosh.
I know.
Amazing.
It's been a great run, huh?
It sure has. Let's keep it going.
You take care, my friend. We'll talk to you in May.
You betcha. Take care. Take care, Bobby. Great talking to you, honey.
Take care. See you next month.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Yep. Okay, bye-bye. Alrighty. Bye-bye. We have a returning guest tonight. This is her fourth visit to the Writer's Block. A prolific writer. She is known for her YA books, and she just is a terrific storyteller. I she's from Enid, Oklahoma. She lives there with her husband. She just doesn't have enough hours in the day to do everything she wants to do. So she writes. Well, she probably drinks a little bit too, but she writes. So I'd like to give a resounding welcome back to the Writer's Block. Please welcome Miss Peggy Chambers.
Woo-hoo! Hey! Thank you.
You're welcome, Peggy.
I try not to drink too much, and but, you know, now and then.
Peggy, you are in Oklahoma, and that's a national sport.
I know, it is, especially when we're playing football.
There you go. Oh, my God, my kind of woman. Your two books, your novella, which is Strawberry Sunday Delights, One Scoop Two, and then, of course, Ian's Magic, which is just a short story about a young boy and his magic, and he thinks math is magic.
Yes, he does.
I would have a problem with that, but
yes, I would.
but apparently Ian didn't. So
no, Ian loved it.
Now I'm going to mea culpa. We've had some Jerry and I have had some things befall us the last 2-3 days, and I did not get a chance to finish your stories. I apologize. It's not the way we do things. Jerry's nephew passed away.
Oh no!
It's been a tough couple days, and so I figured I'd lend my support to her and not try to dig too deep into the story. So I apologize. Yeah. But I did get enough read, and your comic book.
Oh yeah.
I read every page. Every single page.
11?
All 11 of them. Well, yeah, but you know, I'm not a big comic book guy. I never have been. Yeah. But we did read Gloam's Valley, and I love Gloam. Gloam is in there. And it's just so kind of great to see what you pictured and then you see what they drew. And there's a little dichotomy there, but not a lot. And I just really appreciated it. So what a wonderful story that was.
That was a lot of fun. It was a different kind of thing than I've ever written before.
I'm sure it was. And, you know, you're the very first author we've ever talked to that has written a comic book in conjunction with a novel.
Well, so, I originally met the people who put out those. They're called Okie Comics. And I met him at an author fest, and he was looking for Oklahoma stories. Well, that's set in Oklahoma. So I thought, well, we could make a short story. So I wrote a short story, and then with his help, Jeff Provine helped me figure out how to make that into a comic book script, which is a little more difficult. The whole story needs to be told in those little bubbles, and so it's not what I'm used to writing.
Right, right. And there's very few artists that do that kind of work. And they're few and far between anymore. And to get somebody who does that kind of work is tremendous. It's just tremendous.
Well, Mike Kennedy was really great with that.
Right,
he did a beautiful job.
Well, he kind of looks like a cartoon character himself. So,
well, I think he drew that, didn't he? He drew his own picture there.
He did. So anyway, I'm gonna sit back and let Bobby G pretty much take the interview on Ian's Magic and Strawberry Sunday. Okay. I will be asking him some questions, but I'm gonna let Bobby pretty much take the brunt of the work here.
All right.
Hey Peggy, it was really fun reading both of these books. You're very you write across all genres. There's no boundaries for you. You write across all genres. And I think the first time we had you on, the first two times we read the Sand Hill books, and then we had you on for Blooming Justice. And of course, what we read for tonight are very different, and yet your signature is all over them. So let's talk a little bit about Ian's Magic.
Okay.
Who's the age audience for this, would you say?
These are like 7 to 10-year-olds. It's considered a middle grade chapter book.
Okay. Middle grade chapter book. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Jim is letting me know that in a moment we're going to take a break. And before we get further into this, maybe we should just go ahead and do that and come back and learn more about Ian's Magic. Hold on.
Oh, okay. Hi, you're listening to LA Talk Radio. And of course, this is the Writer's Block. We'll be back right with you after a real brief word from LA Talk Radio. Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com, find the link that says Be a Host, and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say. And if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com. And listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio. And we are back with our guest, Peggy Chambers, and I'm looking at Bobby Jean Bell. And if you want to call and talk to Peggy, the number in the studio here is 323-302-0815. And again, that number is 323-302-0815. And you know, every show that we do every Thursday night goes immediately available on podcast, and there are other writer's blocks out there, but we are the only live radio show. So if somebody's trying to tell you they know another writer's block, they may, but not a live show.
Yeah, well, you can talk to the author. And I see Ronan has just told us, Jim, I didn't know if you'd seen this. We had a slight error in the phone number. So get your pen or your pencil or your tablet or whatever you're keeping track. This is the correct number, 323-203-0815. Oh. And we're live here talking to author Peggy Chambers. And we're talking about the first of the two books that we read, Ian's Magic. And this young man, Ian, he's quite a character. And there's something special that happens to his fingers when he does math. It never happened to my fingers.
It didn't happen to mine either.
No. What's the relationship between Ian and math? And we don't really want to do spoiler alerts, but it's so charming. Tell us a little bit about Ian.
If Ian loves to do math, but if he gets his math problems correct, he can also perform magic. For instance, there's a bus coming towards his mother's minivan, and he has to quickly find a math problem that he can complete so that he can magically keep that bus from hitting his mother's minivan. So, I mean, he has things like this that he can do, but only if his math is correct. If he tries to do it and his math is incorrect, the magic doesn't work.
Yeah, it's an interesting, let's ask a little bit about how did this idea, where did this come from? How did you get this idea?
You know, seriously, this is probably the oldest manuscript that I have. I started it many, many years ago when my grandson was little, and he loved math. He just came in telling me, oh, look how cool this is. If I do this, this happens. Uh-huh. And being someone who never understood math anyway, I would just look at him and shake my head and go, I think that's great that you like that, you know. So I decided originally to write the story for him, and he's in college now, so I really doubt that he cares too much. But it was a good story idea because so many kids are like me. I mean, I'm not a kid, but I don't necessarily care about math, not in a good way anyway. As long as my checkbook balances, I'm happy. That's all I need to know.
And that's a problem that Ian's mom has.
All the time.
Yeah, he gets in there and helps her out. I found that it was engaging characters. It's a small cast, but they're friends and family. I love Grandpa, his papa, and the motorcycle. So cool. where did you find a publisher? Is this published by the publisher that's published your other books? Or where did you find this publisher?
This publisher is out of Oklahoma, Yukon, Oklahoma, and it's Doodle and Peck. And she publishes what she calls family-friendly books. They're not just children's books, but mostly. And I met her at a conference in Oklahoma City. We have the Oklahoma Writers Federation conference once a year. And I met Marla Jones there and talked with her about this. And we went through several rewrites, but she's been great. And so I was really happy with Doodle and Peck. They've done a really nice job.
Well, very, very fun. Mm-hmm. And did it, when I didn't pay attention to when it published, did this come out during our COVID year where you wouldn't be able to?
Exactly.
How, How did that impact you, and what do you see for this year?
Well, I think for writing, for most all books, because you can't get out and see the public too much, it, you know, sales are down, of course. I recently contacted some schools and things and offered to do a program. Just, we'll do it on Zoom if you don't want me there, you know, because we're slowly but surely getting to a point where people can go back into the schools and things. But, you know, I will do it however they need to do it. But I really would love to share it with kids because I think they'd enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and any chapter could almost be read aloud or, you know, presented aloud in a way that would make them want to get the book. Did you find that this year, since you weren't really traveling around or making public appearances,
I don't know. I think what you were trying to say was, did I find that I couldn't sell as many?
Well, I was thinking that since you were really homebound, if that had, once you sort of got past the shock of it, were you, did you find yourself actually writing more or, you know, trying things that you hadn't really tried before?
I think I have been able to write more. You know, we've all been bored out of our minds having to stay home. And so you might as well do something constructive. And I have written more. I've started 3 different books, which I haven't decided which one to finish yet. And, but I did publish Ian's Magic and Strawberry Sunday Delights, got those out, even though I couldn't get out and have book signings and things like I would like.
Yeah, so you were productive. So let's see. We still have a couple minutes before we do go to our next break. So let's go ahead and chat for a moment about Sunday Strawberry Delights. Strawberry Sunday Delights. Uh-huh. How did you get that title right? How fun. A revisit to Sandhill Island. Tell us a little bit about this book.
My publisher, the Wild Rose Press, put out they called for some manuscripts having to do with ice cream on a beach. They didn't care what it was, just ice cream on a beach. So people were writing novellas, and Wild Rose Press was putting them out all under the name of One Scoop or Two. That's what they called them. But I already had an ice cream shop set on Sandhill Island, so I went with that and created new characters. And it was an awful lot of fun, I think, to, especially Aunt Betty. I liked Aunt Betty. She was a grumpy old woman.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and you don't necessarily imagine somebody selling ice cream and she makes it all. Oh, my gosh. I wanted, in your other books, I wanted to be drinking iced tea and such. And this one is like, where's the ice cream? Where's the ice cream? You tell a full story in the novella length. We haven't really read that many novellas, have we, Jim? That's new for us.
Let's take 1 second here and have Peggy explain to our listening audience what a novella is.
Perfect.
Okay. Because there's a lot of people who have no idea.
Yeah.
A novella is larger than longer than a short story, but it's smaller than a novel. So they consider it novella. It's 40,000 words or something to that effect.
Right.
Yeah, and you have everything you would normally have. You have characters, you have character development, you have an interesting plot. Hopefully you have an engaging landscape, and you're writing the same kind of way, but you're condensing. And yet I didn't really want the story to end. But I got a really good story. And I thought all the characters, it's a small cast, of course, but just like Aunt Betty, is you gotta love her once you kind of get past the little bit of gruffness. But then there's one of the other gals that works in the works part-time, Gilda, and yes. Your description, tell us, just describe Gilda for us.
The way I saw Gilda, she had very little to say. She was always there and always doing her job, and she would just make sure everything worked, but she didn't have much to say on most occasions, but you knew you could count on her. She knew just what needed to be done, and she took care of business.
Yeah, and she has a little interesting backstory that I would imagine maybe if you go back to Sand Hill, she's somebody that you could explore a little bit more with. I thought, sure. I want to know more, you know, about Gilda. The other fun thing about this book is we revisit a little bit the characters from the first two. Mm-hmm. They're kind of in passing. You don't really tell us, but if we read your books,
yeah,
we go like, oh. So that was very fun. Is that partly, well, it's you were supposed to write about on the beach, so you already had Sand Hill kind of in your pocket, right?
Right, yeah. And I loved Sam. I thought Sam was a great character. He owns the restaurant, the nice restaurant on the,
yes,
not just the burger joint. And
yes,
he's always creating some new dish, and he loves to cook for people. That's his passion. Mm-hmm. And he also is a romantic, you can tell. He just loves to put people together. So,
mm-hmm. And this has, we do have a villain in this little cast. We've got, I didn't like him
Bob.
I didn't like him from the minute he stepped into that.
He was a loud mouth, and he was bound to determine he was going to take the ice cream shop.
Yep. Yep. And if he couldn't have it, it was going to go out of business, right? He's going to take it away. Do you see that these characters could show up again for you?
Oh, I think so. I really think that Jake will be great because he's learning to, he's finishing his college degree, and he's mapping the bottom of the ocean. So he's going to be hanging around anywhere where there's water all the time. And I just think he would be great in the next book. I'm working on Sand Hill Island 3, and I think Jake might have to have a place there.
One of the Jim and I we're Skyping and can see each other, and we both were very excited to hear you say that there's going to be book number 3. This gets a little bit into process already, but we've enjoyed asking this question when we have time. How do you keep your imagination growing and fertile and active? What do you do?
You know, it's interesting because I've always had an imagination, and it got me into trouble in school because my teacher would say, Peggy, you're out picking daisies again, you know. And I have a sister-in-law who says, how do you come up with this? And this woman is a scientist, and she's just very, we got left brain, you got right brain people. And I'm more the artist than she is not. So to me, imagination comes easy. And I often, when I'm doing the dishes, cooking, working out, something like that, I'm always thinking, okay, now what if this character did that? No, I don't like that. Maybe they should do this. So I'm always thinking of something. I don't know.
So when you're out in the garden and you're working and you get an idea, do you speak it into your phone, or do you carry a little tab, you know, a little notebook, or how do you... You know, how do you keep track of the things that just come into the brain?
Well, if I don't have access to something, I try to just remember it. But I used to send myself emails from work and send myself an email to the house, you know. Jake should be allergic to strawberries, you know.
Yes, and... that was. Yeah.
My kind of girl.
Jim, do we... Oh, we're 7:30. Do you want to just go ahead?
We can.
Why don't we just go ahead and take another break?
Okay, ladies, hang tough. Don't go anywhere. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is, of course, the Writer's Block. And we'll be right back after this brief word from Out West.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Okay, we are back. I'm looking at Bobby G, and of course, we're back with our guest tonight, Miss Peggy Chambers, and We're talking about stubborn Ian's magic, and I'm someone like Ian. I mean, I'm surprised when I can do things. You know, look what I can do. Look what happens when I do this. I found that out in the bathtub once when I was like 12.
I'm but, Sally over there reading the book and could care less about math.
There you go. But, yeah. We're back with Peggy, and if you want to call and talk to Peggy, the number here in the studio, I'm going to get it right this time, 323-203-0815. And again, that number is 323-203-0815. And you can call and you can talk right to Miss Peggy Chambers in Enid, Oklahoma. Okay, let's get into process, because I know we've asked you these questions before, but we have a brand new audience. Every week we have a new audience. So let's ask you now, Wendy, is your favorite time to write?
Oh, that's difficult to say, but I write most days. And I used to, of course, when I was working, I'm retired now, but when I worked, I had to write in the evenings. I always wrote on Sundays. I always had the house to myself on Sundays, so that was a good time to write. But I've learned to just sit with my laptop while I'm in the living room and write if something comes to me. Because like what Bobby Jean was saying a minute ago, when you get an idea, you better write it down. You know?
Right. Yeah.
And so I do try to do that.
Right. I do the same thing. I have my laptop right there, and if something comes, I just grab it and open it up and find the file I'm working on and start tapping.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you belong, I think from the website maybe, do you belong to a writer's group local there in Enid?
We have the Enid Writers Club here in Enid. It's not a very large group, but we're also affiliates of the Oklahoma Writer Federation, which is statewide. So I'm a member of both of those.
Do you find that to be helpful for you? Or because you've written so much, do you find that you're sort of one of the, you know, mentors? Or would you recommend to writers that they hook up with a group in their area if there is one?
I definitely do. I think it has made all the difference in the world. I have in my Enid Writers Club, we have a critique group that gets together a couple of times a month. And we'll present three pages and say, what's wrong with this? Or what's good about this? You know, we help each other. Mm-hmm. And I've met all of my publishers through OWFI, through the conference that we have once a year, which sadly is going to have to be virtual this year. But I really think that it's great to network that way. It's great to have people look at your writing and say, I don't know what you were thinking, but you just stepped out of your point of view, you know, and they're right. They're right. And you can't see that in your own writing sometimes. So.
Yeah. Well, and if you meet a couple of times a month, it may also help the procrastinator get something on paper. You
it
know,
does, because you know you've got a deadline coming up. So.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. What else about Jim Presses? What else? What do you want to ask?
What? Who, me?
Yeah.
Golly. Golly, yeah. Gee. Well, I'm thinking about when you are writing and you're putting down page by page by page, do you stop to edit your own work before you go on? Like, say, you finish chapter one, do you go back and edit it before you go to chapter two?
Not really. Now, a lot of times when I sit down to write, I will go back and read the chapter prior, so I remember exactly where I was at. Mm-hmm. But I try not to. I don't know how you write, but for me, it's more of get it down on paper and then go back and make it nice.
Right.
Again,
yeah,
why
I
were
did
you,
the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
because
I rely
I have a tendency to change tenses or something dumb, you know.
You know, fortunately for me, my editor lives, you know, in the same house.
So, that helps. I got one of those too.
Yeah, it does. And I give it to her chapter by chapter. She doesn't get the whole book at one time.
Uh-huh.
So if I give her chapter three, I give her chapter two and three.
She likes to what?
Oh, she likes to be able to go back and keep everything in context.
Continuity
is really, really important to her, especially when she's editing, because a lot of times she'll blue line something and say, wait a minute, go back to the prior chapter and read what you wrote, and then let's fix this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so she's got it a good eye,
Yeah.
She's the queen of commas.
Well, I have a tendency to write a chapter and then I later move it around. I don't know. Do you do that?
Sometimes. And I'll write entire passages. If a battle scene or a fight comes, if I'm visualizing a fight, man, I'll jump on my Word program and I'll write it down. It may take 6 pages, but I don't want to lose it. And then when it comes to that point in the book, I just go cut and paste it right in there, and it's already done.
Right.
Do you, Peggy, do you have, Jim, because you could answer this also, you just mentioned a moment ago about Jake and discovering that he's allergic to strawberries. Yeah. And it becomes kind of an important piece to the story.
Wow. Yeah, she's breaking up really badly. I have no idea what she's trying to ask. She has a look of pure fear on her face right now.
Sorry.
I don't know what she was going to ask, so I'll ask another question while we're getting Bobby back online.
Can you not hear me again?
Oh, there she is. Okay, we couldn't. Oh. No, you were frozen in time.
Oh, I don't know why I'm having that problem. Can you hear me now? Still?
We can hear you now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, my question was about events that are important to a storyline and whether you know all of those before you get started or it's revealed to you, like Jake being allergic to strawberries. Did you always know he would be, or did you determine, I need Jake to be allergic to strawberries, and you added it in?
No, I added it in later because I was trying to find, of course, there's plenty of conflict with Big Bob and the ice cream shop, but I needed something for him to come to the rescue. This is essentially a romance novel. So he needed to be able to rescue the damsel in distress. And so he went out to take care of business, knowing he really shouldn't be out there in the middle of the strawberries, but he did it anyway for her. So.
Yeah, and it adds texture to the story.
It
mm-hmm.
does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Angst is always good, especially in romance.
Yes, it is.
I know. It's our
my gosh!
I know.
That's embarrassing.
Savannah Hendricks.
Oh, Savannah Hendricks.
her book it was just full of angst. I mean. From start to finish, top to bottom, left to right, forward and backward, forward and backwards, forward and backwards, forward and backwards. And this girl had such a hard time living, much less doing anything else. And it was just, but it kept the story flowing. And I think that's necessary when you're talking about, in romance, because that's real life type stuff. So it's really necessary when you have real life type stuff that you throw in angst, because that's what we live. Our lives are full of it. So,
right.
And it's, besides that, it's a great word, angst.
How do you spell that?
I know. How do you spell it then? C-R-A-P, angst. Go ahead, Bobby.
I know we're talking process, but I've been intrigued lately. PBS has been running, encouraging people to participate in what they're calling the National Storytelling Project. Share a story, and they have all kinds of really great questions to just help you, access your own story to share. And some of them I thought, it might be fun to ask our author guests one or two of these questions, my greatest challenge is ...
Wow, that's a great question.
Oh my, that is a great question. Well, one of my greatest challenges is trying to decide which of these works in progress I need to go ahead and finish.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
I'm really bad about starting another one when I haven't finished the last one yet. That's a big one. And I always have another story in mind. I just don't always know where it's going. So.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that through your writing career, because you've been writing a long time, that somehow the funnel's never empty, that there's just always a new story that's like ready to come in.
I think so. I always have something that I'm working on or that I'm thinking about at least. And I try to sit down and just write myself notes. This character is going to do this and this and this. It's not really an outline as much as I want this in the story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jim, do you want to ask the question? I'm looking at the time.
I can ask that question, but you know what? I wanted to ask another one.
Okay.
The opening line in a book, and we have talked about this endlessly for 6 years now, the opening line in the book is so important to myself and to Bobby because that's what grabs our attention and keeps mm-hmm. us in the book. It makes us want to go to page two.
Right.
And makes us want to go to page three and makes us want to go to page four because we remember back to that opening line. Do you work on that opening line in your book when you're first starting to sit down and write a novel?
I try to do that because I think it's real important. The opening line, the first word, a first sentence is very important. Like, it was the worst of times, it was the best of times, right?
Right, right.
But at the same time, the first scene is so important because if you start talking about the fact that, well, like Snoopy, it was a dark and stormy night, no one knows where you're going, no one cares, so it stormed. But if you can draw your readership in, And they want to know, why did this guy die? Why did he fall off the boat? I mean, who'd killed him?
Right.
Then you've pulled him in.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. We're gonna get to that question, Bobby, right after the short break. But right now, you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. And we will be right back with you after this brief word from Tuscany Bay Books. Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com. Your answer to getting your book published. And right now, we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books. And we are back. And right now, we just finished up a series of children's books for Mary Elizabeth Jackson called The Poolicious. So if you're looking for some nice children's books, they're 20, most of them are like 22, 25 pages. The first one has like music at the back end of it. They're great. They're great kids' books. They're well illustrated. The print is big. I mean, even a blind person can read it, which happens to be me. So if you go on Amazon or any of the online booksellers, Poolicious, Poohlicious, and it's look at me, and there's a few others. But go give them a shot, and look into Tuscany Bay if you're a writer and you don't know what to do with yourself. Okay. I'm going to ask you this question now, Peggy, and we have asked you this question three times prior.
Okay.
And I believe the three times that we've asked you, we've come up with a different answer. So we're going to go for
probably.
Four.
Okay.
Have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get over it?
Yes, I have. And the way I find the best way for me to do it is to go through my novel and I outline it even after the fact. I outline prior to, but I write down what all has happened, and it seems to get me moving towards what still needs to be accomplished. I recently did that with Blooming Greed, which is my latest work in progress that is on the editor's table now. And I moved things around, and I finally got rid of the block that was, I didn't know why the dam was going to break, but it had to break, and it did.
Do you find that after you've overcome your writer's block, we like to call it writer's pause, that you're actually, you're writing it, just as you said, it gets more prolific. You just like feel a fresh start. It's like a breath of fresh air, and you just dive in.
I think that's true.
And the ideas are flowing, and you're just like, wow, another glass of wine, I'm good for a week.
A glass of wine or whatever you have, like Hemingway.
Give me a glass of wine and my writing stops. I give me a glass of wine and my writing stops immediately. I go back to the bottle. No, I'm teasing.
Okay, it was Hemingway who said, write drunk. Edit sober, right?
That's it.
Is that who originally said it? We've heard that quote, and people haven't been able to remember. You know, they say,
drunk,
"Well, not
sober.
Me." It's, you know, oh, Hemingway. I'm looking forward to the PBS to the Ken Burns documentary that should be coming out. Gosh, like any day now. I think during this month. Yeah,
I think it was Tosca Lee that told us that one. She was talking in the backyard.
A drone in her window.
A drone, yeah. Her husband and her kids were out in the backyard playing with the drone. And it had a camera on it, so they put it up at her writing window, and it was taking pictures of her. She was trying to write.
When she writes, she does dialogue with herself, and she stands like an actress, and she sort of plays both roles. And so I guess they thought it would be really fun to catch that on the drone.
Well, that was a good question. I was also going to ask you, Peggy. Uh-huh. Do you read back your dialogue to make sure it works and it coalesces with the other stuff?
I do, and I a lot of times try to read it out loud because that it helps you see things that you wouldn't, you know, that doesn't flow. And so, and you know, Word has a feature where they'll read it to you, but it's very robotic. So.
Yeah. Because you have to have that inflection on the syllable and the word. I mean, sometimes the words are spread out. There's pauses that we do in there in natural speaking. There's all kinds of things that word can't do for you.
Right.
So when you put your dot, dot, dot in there, okay, I know that's a pause. Word says, no, you have to put a period. So anyway... Well, look, we're not going to take up any more of your time. It's Word Show is about done, and we have really appreciated your visit with us again tonight. And you know, you're always welcome to come back, Peggy. All you got to do is get a hold of the bookie, and you know, she'll always slide you in.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Because that's how much we love you.
Well, I love you guys too, and it's really fun to talk with you.
Well, it is fun to talk with you, and we have favorite authors, and you're one. And so we you know, we don't let you back five times or four times if we don't like you.
True, because we have to read the books. Because we also have to read the books.
Right.
Yeah, you have to read the books.
I'll tell you not a funny story, but a story about our very first year in the air. We were working with an agent named Jeannie Loyacano. And she was turned out to be not so good of an agent, but one of her clients from the South Bay, LA area came into the studio, and he was going to discuss one of his books with us. I believe it was about the Civil War. That was Jack. Remember Jack?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember his last name, Jack Martin. And Jack was in there, and his wife had died like 2 weeks prior.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
And the poor guy just couldn't get out anything about his book. And it was like, it was the most excruciating hour Bobby and I have ever spent on the radio, trying to drag his story out of him. Mm-hmm. And the sad thing was that the book was really good.
Yeah, the book was really good. Yeah.
But he could not talk about it. You knew he wanted to talk about his wife.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and it's really tough to steer somebody like that away from what he wants to talk about.
Yeah.
But you know, this isn't a funeral dirge program. This is about writing.
Right. So, yeah, he just wasn't ready for that at that time.
He was not ready for us, and we certainly were not ready for him.
Yeah, we were nice new too. Yeah, we were cutting our teeth also. So, you know, we were all in it together.
Bobby and I now do Skype, and we can see each other, which we used to do in the studio. Of course, we looked right across the table at each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the same, and I give her the hand sign, and you know, 1 minute, 2 minutes, and she now knows when the commercial breaks are, and we don't have to guess.
And we don't talk over each other quite as much as we were doing before Skype, because we can see, you know, one of us has something to say.
Peggy, give us let our audience know where they can reach you, your email address and your website and all that stuff, if you wouldn't mind.
All right. The website is PeggyLChambers.com. And my email address is just as simple, Peggy.Chambers@Hotmail.com.
Okay. And make sure that Jerry gets a heads-up notification of the new Sandhill novel, because you know she loves them.
Oh, I will let her know.
Okay. And thanks for joining us, Peggy. We appreciate it so much when you're with us.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Peggy.
Good night, Peggy.
Uh-huh. Good night. Bye-bye. Good night.
Bye-bye. And next week, we have Margaret Rodenberg with us, and I don't know what she's written. I have not yet got the book. No, that's not it. We have some really great guests coming up this year, and I tell you, there was one, Chasing the Huey or something, the artist rendition of a Huey that he salvaged out of a salvage yard, a Huey helicopter from Vietnam, and he painted it all different colors, and he takes it around the country on a trailer, and all the Vietnam vets sign it. It's a very cool story, and unfortunately for us, the man passed away.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have his co-author will be joining us with her very own book, Kate Houlihan, and her name of her book is Her Three Lives, and I do have a copy for you here.
I think that just came in the mail.
Oh, did you get one?
Like yesterday.
Oh, okay, excellent. Then you have a copy.
And I just couldn't tell. I mean, it had a note, but like a press release kind of note. So I didn't know it was something like an advanced reader. Right. I hadn't really, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah, I got it.
She'll be joining us down the road, I think, in August.
Okay.
We have some really good authors coming up, and we have some return guys coming up, and it's always fun, always great here in the Writer's Block. And I just, 6 years, I just love this.
I know. I do, too, and I'm just so blessed that you invited me to come along for the ride, Jim.
Well, we're here, by golly, and we're not going anywhere. Okay. So for Bobby Jean Bell and, of course, Jim Bell, her husband, and the procurer of all the stuff famous and out west, and, of course, Ronan Rosner, our engineer, and Sam Hassan, the owner of our studio, and myself and the bookie, never forget the bookie, and Russ Avison, our every third Thursday host, we are out of here.